the upper arms. What? I'll fix it or buy it or destroy it.
I love you.
Her words, the sincerity behind them, had my stomach throwing itself off a cliff. Say it again, I ordered gruffly. Her smile was a sunbeam that warmed the darkest corners of my heart.
I love you, Lucian freaking Rollins. I always have. I always will.
I kissed her, hard. I crushed my mouth to hers as I yanked her body to mine.
Chief, we've got a 1091A of the rooster variety at the poppin' stop again.
The static-filled radio announcement drowned out Shania.
Shit. Sorry, Lucy,
Nash said through the bullhorn. Sloane grinned up at me, and once again, I basked in the feeling of being the hero instead of the villain. Your smile makes me love you even more, I confessed.
Back at you, big guy.
I can't wait to wake up tomorrow and remember this, I admitted.
I love you, Lucian.
Even if you wear suits to bed and are snooty about peanut butter brands. And I love you, Sloane, even if you drive me absolutely insane 24 hours a day for the rest of my life.
I really wish we could have sex right now, she said. But I appreciate the long game.
I'll make up for it the second the doctor or Google gives the okay, whichever is first. I kissed her again, long and hard.
Naomi is going to kick my ass for not telling her about this,
I heard Knox mutter distantly.
Just tell her it was man code, Nash advised.
My mom is going to freak out, Sloane predicted.
Karen.
Welcome to the family, my favorite soon-to-be son-in-law.
Maeve,
don't fuck things up.
Chloe,
Uncle Lucian, as junior bridesmaid, here are a few of the designer dresses I think I would look best in for the ceremony and reception.
46. Books Save Lives. Sloane.
Stop jiggling your leg. Jeremiah ordered Lena, who looked as if she were about to bolt from his salon chair. It was the perfect spring afternoon, and we were at Whiskey Clipper, Knockemout's hip barbershop salon, getting glammed for Lena and Nash's wedding rehearsal that evening. The cool barbershop salon was hopping on a Friday afternoon. Knox's basset hound, Waylon, flattened himself on the floor with a chew bone, while Knox was giving Vernon Quigg's lustrous mustache a trim. Naomi was oohing and aahing over the sleek updo stylist Anastasia was assembling. Knox's business manager and Jeremiah's sister, Fee, was huddled behind the front desk's computer with Waylay as the 12-year-old walked her through the new scheduling software. Steph and I were on the leather couch under the front window, watching the chaos. My hair was done in a high, flirty ponytail that I gleefully knew my fiancé, Lucian freaking Rollins, would wrap around his fist before the night was over. The bride glared in the mirror at Jeremiah as he ruffled her short, dark hair this way and that. I'm not jiggling. You're jiggling. It's kind of fun watching the calm, collected Lena tiptoe into a meltdown, I mused. Steph took a pensive sip of his whiskey and continued to frown. I'm not having a meltdown, Lena said, taking obvious offense. Yeah, you are, everyone in the shop except for Steph chorused. All of you can bite me, she grumbled, crossing her arms under the cape. Are you okay? I asked Steph. He was staring at Jeremiah and looking downright miserable. I'm great. He got up, looking anything but great, and refilled his whiskey from one of the decanters on the shelf. Psst. I looked up. Waylay nodded in Steph's direction. What's his problem? She mouthed. I shrugged and made a face. Jeremiah spun Lena's chair around to face him. Listen up, you fierce, beautiful badass. I don't think you're nervous about getting married. I think you're nervous about the wedding. Is there a difference? Lena asked dryly. I've seen you with Nash. You're excited about being married and starting your lives together. Don't let wedding day jitters make you doubt that. Lena opened her mouth, then shut it again. Huh, she said. Naomi tiptoed her chair around to face the bride. He's right. Not everyone is excited about being a bride, the center of attention all day. But I know you, and I know you're thrilled to be a wife. Lena's shoulders relaxed. Oh, thank God. I thought there was something wrong with me. No, but there's something wrong with me, Steph said, knocking back the fresh whiskey and slamming the glass down. Fee took the lollipop out of her mouth. What's happening here? Waylon dropped his chew bone and tip-tapped over to Steph's feet. Steph marched over to Jeremiah. Your apartment is gross, he announced. I pressed my lips together to keep from laughing. It really is, Fee agreed. Who disassembles a motorcycle in their living room? Okay, Jeremiah said cautiously. It's gross, and there isn't enough closet space. But I think we should move in together, Steph blurted out. Oh, shit, Fee whispered, grabbing Waylay in a headlock hug. I know we haven't talked about the future, and I know that it's probably stupid crazy of me to move here. But you're here, he said, looking at Jeremiah. He turned to Naomi. And you're here. You're all here. I have family here, and the more I think about it, the crazier it would be to stay away. Jeremiah tipped his head down and studied the toes of his boots. Lena and I shared a wide-eyed look. Guess you won't be selling your half of the business after all, Knox said to his partner. All heads whipped back to Jeremiah, who was grinning now. Guess not. You were going to sell? Steph repeated. Why in the hell would you do that? You love this place. I love you more. Jeremiah said it simply, without fuss. The words had tears prickling at the backs of my eyes. This is why communication is fucking important, Knox said, crossing his muscly arms. Seriously? Lena said with a smirk. You of all people. Fuck off. I've evolved and shit, Knox said. Vernon pulled the hot towel off of his eyes. What the hell is going on here? This mustache ain't gonna shape itself. Naomi beamed at her husband. Waylay rolled her eyes. Hang on, Steph said, waving his hands. I had a lot of whiskey in a very short period of time. Are you saying you're okay with us moving in together, even if I make you move out of your apartment that smells like diesel fumes? Jeremiah began to approach slowly. I'm saying, let's buy a house or a farm or an estate or whatever you want. Steph was nodding and swallowing. Yeah, okay. That sounds fine. Jeremiah took Steph's hands. I'm saying let's be a family. With our families. Oh my God, I breathed and pulled out my phone to record the moment. What are you saying, Jer? Steph demanded. I'm saying let's move in. Let's get married. Let's do the whole damn thing. I've been waiting a long damn time for you. Let's get started already. Naomi brought her hands to her cheeks. Don't you dare start crying, Days, Knox ordered gruffly. He abandoned Vernon and crossed to his wife. Oh, brother, now they're gonna make out, Waylay predicted, returning her focus to the software update with an exaggerated eye roll. I'm charging extra for this. Yes, Steph said, sounding dazed. Yes to all those things. Naomi let out a loud sniffle. Knox swore. Fee bolted out of her chair and her lollipop went flying. My baby brother is getting married and moving out of that poor excuse for an apartment. Waylon sauntered over and slurped up the discarded candy. Drop it, Way. Knox barked. He means you, Waylay said to the dog without looking away from the monitor.
Bust out the champagne,
Vernon decreed, offering up aftershave-scented high fives. I got in line to offer my congratulations.
We're all going to raise our families together, Naomi said with a trembling voice.
Do not make me cry, Witty. I'm a puffy crier, and I have to look stunning tonight, Lena groused. Family. Just a few short months ago, I'd realized it was what I wanted more than anything. Now, thanks to Lucian and these women, there would be new life in my home. More parties, more holidays, more love, more laughter. I felt the pang. My dad would have loved this. He would have been over the moon, planning engagement parties, writing funny toasts, practicing our father-daughter dance. I missed him so much it hurt to breathe. I love you, Dad, I said silently. Thank you for everything. As if reading my mind, Naomi squeezed my wrist, the one a monster had broken all those years ago. That monster's son had managed to put his own broken pieces together again and heal my broken heart in the process.
We're getting married,
Steph yelled, holding up Jeremiah's hand. We converged on the happy couple. Even Knox and Waylay got in on the hugging. My phone rang as I drove home with great hair and a full heart.
You are not going to believe what happened today, big guy, I announced when I answered the call.
As it turns out, I have news for you, too,
Lucian's buttery smooth voice said through the Jeep speakers.
You go first.
Steph asked Jeremiah to move in with him, and Jeremiah asked him to marry him.
That escalated quickly, he quipped.
I can't wait for their wedding. Queer weddings are the best, I said happily as I turned onto my street. Now tell me your news. Is it good or bad?
It's very good news. I just got out of a briefing with Special Agent Idler. It appears that Hugo's Shell Corporation was bribing officials to assign prisoners to his private prisons. They've only just begun quietly digging, and it looks as though several judges, district attorneys, even some local law enforcement, were also on the receiving end of some highly illegal kickbacks. The higher the sentence, the bigger the kickback.
Wow, I said.
The preliminary list includes the not-so-honorable Judge Dirk Atkins.
As in the Dirk Atkins who refused to reconsider Mary Louise's sentence?
One and the same, Lucian said smugly. Idler promised me she'd personally look into Mary Louise's case. There's a very good chance that an investigation will result in many of his sentences being overturned.
Overturned? I squeaked. As in, get out of jail overturned?
It will take some time, but I'll do what I can to speed things along. We should have her out before Alan's graduation.
Lucian continued. My response was a choked sob.
Sloan.
Lucian's voice was an affectionate rasp over my name.
I'm so happy, I whispered through tears.
Yes, I can tell,
he said dryly.
God, I love you.
Get ready to really mean it, because I arranged for you and Fran to call Mary Louise to tell her the good news in 5 minutes.
Jeez Louise, Lucian, I said, whipping into my driveway. I'm running out of room on the blowjobs when the doctor clears you tally sheet.
I'm confident you'll make room, he said. Now go call Mary Louise.
I appreciate the call, but like I said before, I'm not going to change my mind about this. I'm not going to endanger my son by telling my story, Mary Louise announced as soon as the greetings were exchanged.
Why don't you share the news? Fran said to me from the screen of my laptop. She was wearing a canary yellow knit blazer with sparkly threads.
I was all but bouncing out of my chair. Mary Louise, you don't have to tell your story, and we don't have to appeal. But you're still going to go home soon.
Her face froze, and then her eyes started to go wide.
I'm sorry. I think there's something wrong with our connection. It sounded like you said...
It's true, Fran verified. The judge has been implicated in some hinky dealings, and once the investigation is underway, they're going to be taking a hard look at his cases, starting with yours.
The judge and everyone else connected is going down. Not only won't you have to do anything about it, you also won't have to worry about retaliation anymore. I promised her, knowing Lucian would help me keep that promise.
Mary Louise brought her hands to her face, covering her eyes.
I don't believe it. I just can't believe it.
Believe it, Fran advised with a rare smile. Now, here's what I think we can expect.
As the lawyer walked Mary Louise through the next steps, I absentmindedly paged through Mary Louise's case file. All those years lost. All that time stolen. It could have easily been Lucian all those years ago. All because greedy men wanted to line their pockets. I hoped they'd pay, every last one of them. Lucian and I would make sure that they did, even as we figured out this new normal and began to build a life together. And Mary Louise would get her life back. Tears clouded my vision again. I blinked them back and stared down at the papers on the desk. A familiar name on the page caught my eye and I frowned. It was a copy of Mary Louise's arrest record. Arresting Officer, Chief Wiley Ogden. My heart stuttered in my chest. Lucian had mentioned local law enforcement had been on Hugo's prison scheme payroll. Was Wiley one of them? He sure as hell hadn't played by the book when he was chief of police, letting his friends off the hook and cracking down on citizens he didn't feel any loyalty toward. Another thought struck me like a brick to the face. He'd been friends with Tate Dilton, who had been up to his eyeballs in involvement with the Hugo crime family. What if Wiley had been the one to make the introduction? My heartbeat was echoing in my skull. I needed to call Lucian and Nash.
We'll be in touch as soon as we know more, but we wanted you to know that your days in that place are officially numbered, Fran was saying, drawing my attention back to my laptop.
Mary Louise's shoulders shook as she cried silently. She dropped her hands suddenly. My baby, does Alan know? I shook off my stupor and pasted a smile on my face.
Not yet. We thought he'd like to hear the news from you.
The video feed and everything else in the house cut off abruptly. Damn it, I muttered. Power outages never happened at convenient times. I snatched up the arrest report and was just scrolling for Lucian's number on my phone when the doorbell rang. I raced to the front door, hoping it was Nash on official wedding business, and yanked it open. But it wasn't Nash. No, standing with dirty boots on my new welcome mat was Wiley Ogden. He was holding a box of books. A red toothpick dangled from his lower lip. Fuckity fuck fuck. Relax, I told myself. He doesn't know I know. Hell, I don't know if I know.
Hi, Wiley, I said, sounding suspicious as hell. What can I do for you?
Picked these up at an estate sale and thought you might want them for the library. Shame about the fire.
The fire that he could have easily set. The fire. The note. The rats on my porch. Oh, God. Something tickled my nose. Was it...
Your toothpick smells like cinnamon, I said in a strangled voice.
Family habit, he said. My dad always had cinnamon toothpicks on him when I was growing up. I wanted to be just like him from the time I could walk.
I wasn't sure what a normal person would say in response to that, so I just gave him my best fake smile. Well, thank you for your generosity. I'll be happy to take those books off your hands, I said, reaching for the box.
It's a heavy one, and I'm a gentleman. I insist.
Short of shoving him out the door and slamming it in his face, I didn't know what my next move should be. If I did that, he'd know that I knew. You can set them down just here on the floor. I'll get to them after Nash's wedding. In fact, he should be here any minute to pick me up. I lied brightly.
She knows.
The husky southern drawl behind me had the blood draining out of my face. I spun around on my stockinged feet, only to find Judge Atkins standing in the hallway, wielding a gun with what appeared to be a silencer screwed to the barrel.
That's not a gavel, I joked stupidly.
Shut the door, Ogden,
Atkins ordered. Wiley set the books down, then obediently closed and locked the front door.
Don't get your robes in a knot,
Wiley complained. He was nervous, shifting his weight from foot to foot, his eyes darting around. It made me even more nervous.
She knows enough to be scared after death of you knocking on her door now, doesn't she?
The judge said, wiggling the gun in my direction. I glanced around me, trying to come up with a plan of action. If I ran, I guessed the judge would have no qualms about shooting me in the back. If I tried to fight him like the rabid weasel he was, well, I'd end up with the holes in my front, and I really liked this dress. I didn't have shoes on, so traction and kicking were problems. I needed to at least stash the arrest report somewhere that Lucian would find it. He'd put two and two together. My gaze snagged on one of the nearly hidden security cameras Lucian had installed in the living room. But the light wasn't on. They'd cut the power and the Wi-Fi, I realized with a sinking sensation in my gut. I dropped the arrest report and slowly put my hands on my head to show them I was no threat.
What's the plan here, guys? It's a small town. Odds are someone saw you on my porch or climbing my fence.
I was just donating books,
Wiley reminded me, producing a gun of his own from the waistband of his old man pants. Great, now two gun-wielding bad guys were making a Sloan sandwich.
And you were fine when I left.
I was going to throw up everywhere.
And I'm not here. I'm with my wife, enjoying a romantic anniversary dinner,
Atkins said with a mean smile.
And any evidence will be burned up in the fire.
The man intended to shoot me and set fire to my house. I almost felt sorry for him, because Lucian wouldn't stop until he'd destroyed everything Atkins held sacred.
Look, I don't know why you think you have to do this. Is it really necessary? I mean, so you took some kickbacks from a prison and set fire to a public library. It's not like you murdered someone.
I'm not letting some little blonde destroy my legacy over a few dollars,
the judge announced.
I've made my life's work putting criminals behind bars.
Yeah, the asshole was a goddamn hero.
You should have listened to the warnings,
Wiley said sadly.
It shouldn't have come to this.
I debated sharing the news that the FBI would be closing in on both of them, then rejected it. They wanted me dead to protect themselves. Having absolutely nothing left to lose probably wouldn't make them any more amenable to letting me stay alive.
Where are we doing this?
Wiley asked.
Do I look like I give a good goddamn where we kill the girl?
Atkins demanded.
How about the front yard? I suggested weakly.
We'll take her in the back of the house,
Wiley decided and waved his gun at me.
but there was something in his stare. Something pointed. His gaze slid to the library cart just inside the living room doorway, then back to me. It was stacked high with several thick thriller novels. He lowered his chin at me, and I nodded once.
"Let's go,"
he said, gesturing me to walk into the living room. I stepped into the room, the wall briefly hiding me from the judge's view. Praying I hadn't misread the signal, I grabbed the end of the cart and shoved it with all my might just as Atkins rounded the corner. There was a crunch, a groan, and a muffled shot, followed by three louder, rapid shots. I patted down my torso and was exceptionally relieved to find no holes in me or my dress.
"Son of a bitch!"
Atkins gurgled as he lost copious amounts of blood on my hardwood floor from wounds in his neck, chest, and torso.
"Oh my God! Oh my God!"
I chanted as Wiley picked up Atkins's gun.
"What do we do now?"
"I really hate to do this to you, Sloane, but you gotta understand,"
Wiley said, pointing both weapons at me.
"Seriously, Wiley? Why the fuck do you still want to shoot me?" I screeched.
"Tying up loose ends. With you and the judge gone, there's no one left to point a finger at me. The money I got from Hugo was nothing compared to what Atkins got. A few thousand here and there. I never even cared about it. I only cared about the job."
The job he'd abused. The job Nash had taken from him.
"So what if I made a little money on the side? A police chief's salary ain't nothing to write home about. I was proud of my work, and Nash Morgan took that away from me. I'm sure as hell not gonna let his little friend take my reputation, too."
I closed my eyes for a second as the realization sunk in. "You put Nash's name on that list, didn't you?"
"Didn't want to miss out on the opportunity. Metzer was making a list. I helped him out. My fee was adding one more name."
I shook my head. "So you set it all in motion." He shrugged.
"I have a legacy to protect. It's all I have left."
"That's not a legacy. That's a pattern of bad behavior."
"You don't know what it takes to protect an entire town."
"Yeah? Well, obviously neither do you. You put a 17-year-old boy in jail and let his abusive father nearly kill his mother because you were fishing buddies."
"Say what you want, because it don't matter. Only one of us is walking out of here tonight, and it ain't gonna be you."
"What are you going to do? Shoot me with the judge's gun?"
"Seems like a good plan to me."
I heard a squeal of tires on the road out front and prayed that help was on the way.
"No one is going to believe that you just happened to come upon a district judge threatening me and shot him," I told him.
He shot me a crooked grin.
"They believed it once already."
His words sank in slowly.
"Jesus! You didn't kill Tate because you were protecting Nash. You killed him because you were protecting yourself."
"I waited till he pulled the trigger, thinking either he would take care of Nash for me or he was out of bullets. Son of a bitch never did learn to count his rounds. I hated to do it. He was my friend. But Tate was a loose fucking cannon. He would have run his mouth to the wrong guy eventually."
"So you killed your own friend?"
"According to the official report, I shot a man defending an officer of the law,"
he corrected.
"And what's the official report going to say this time?"
He shrugged.
"I was just returning my library books."
He was going to do it. He was going to shoot me and ruin Nash and Lena's rehearsal night. I grabbed a hefty hardback off the side table and hurled it at Wiley's head. Both guns went off as I launched myself over the couch. I landed hard, catching my jaw on the sharp edge of the console table leg. More bullets flew, this time through my couch. I rolled,
gained my feet, and sprinted low through the dining room, pulling chairs down after me. He was close, but I knew every inch of this house. I darted through the kitchen and backtracked into the hallway where I took the stairs two at a time. The sirens were getting louder now.
"You can't run from me,"
Wiley shouted from the foot of the stairs. "And you can't expect me to stand still so you can shoot me." His boots hit the stairs. A streak of fur passed me on the landing as I hustled for the second floor. I heard a thump and muffled swearing. Thank God for asshole cats. Meow Meow had just bought me precious seconds. I heaved myself up the last steps and ran face first into a hard male body. I was just getting ready to kick the shit out of him when a hand clamped over my mouth and I was lifted off the floor.
47. Wrongs Righted. Lucian.
"Stop kicking, Pix," I hissed as I shut and locked her bedroom door behind us. I released my flailing fiancée and she spun around to face me. She was wearing the pink cocktail dress that I'd personally picked out because it clung to her curves in all the right places. Her hair was secured in a high, platinum ponytail with strands escaping everywhere. Her glasses were a spring green that only served to make her eyes look brighter. There was a bloody gash on her jawline. "I'm going to fucking kill him," I announced. Rage bloomed inside me like a deadly flower. Sloan lunged for me and held on tight.
"You can't. It's Wiley."
"I know. I saw the security footage just before it cut off."
"He made me think he was going to help me. Then he shot the judge. Oh, yeah. The judge was here, too, but I think he's dead in the foyer. And then he tried to shoot me. Wiley, not the dead judge. And he's the one who put Nash's name on the list, not Dilton." "Oh, my God. And he murdered Dilton to keep him quiet, not to save Nash. I am so pissed. Do you know how long it's going to take to get bloodstains out of hardwood? And they burned my library."
The words came out in a deluge of indignation, but her explanation only served to light a match inside me.
"You can't hide from me long enough to stay alive, Sloan. I'll drop you where I find you before the cops get here,"
Wiley announced from the hallway. We heard the clomp of his boots and the creak of doors as he started checking rooms. In the distance, I heard sirens. I'd just pulled into the driveway when I heard the gunshots. It had taken years off my life. I grabbed a clean handkerchief from the dresser and pressed it to Sloane's face.
"Ow!
Come on, baby." I half-dragged, half-carried her to the window seat. She eagerly climbed onto the cushion and swung a leg over the sill of the window I'd left open.
"Let's go,"
she said. I shook my head. "You go first. I'll make sure he doesn't see you on the roof." She flinched.
"Lucian!"
"Sloan, go!" The footsteps were getting closer, and that lock on the door wouldn't hold back an overly excited golden retriever.
"I'm not leaving you,"
she said stubbornly. I cupped her face in my hands. "Pixie, I need you to trust me this time. Trust me to handle this. I'm asking you, but in a second, I'm going to be telling you. I need to deal with this, and I can't do it if I'm worried that he has a clear shot at you. Trust me to do this." The doorknob rattled, followed by Wiley's raspy cackle.
"I know you're in there, girl."
"Ugh, fine. But I'm also trusting you not to murder him," Sloan said.
"I'm not promising that." She swung her leg over the windowsill.
"Don't let me down."
"Women."
"Oh, also, he has two guns, his and the judge's. He was going to make it look like he caught the judge murdering me."
The sirens were screaming down the street now, and an anger unlike any other I'd ever known tinged everything a bloody murder red. I shoved her out the window onto the roof. "I love you. Now get the fuck out."
"I love you too. Don't end up in jail," she whispered.
I shut the curtains on her just as a boot landed a hard kick to the door. It flew open on the second kick, rebounding off the wall as I hurried across the room and flattened myself against the wall. The barrel of a gun with a silencer came into view.
Come out, wherever you..."
I brought my arm down on his in a fast, sweeping arc. My forearm connected with his. I grabbed him and dragged him farther into the room.
"Son of a bitch!"
More like son of a bastard,
I snarled back as we wrestled for the gun.
Your dad was a good man. You were just a no-good brat who thought he was better than everybody.
I was better than him. You took everything from me once. I won't let it happen again, old man. I threw an elbow to his jaw, and he howled in pain. The gun tumbled to the floor, and I kicked it toward the bed.
You hurt her. You threatened her, burned down her library, and you made her bleed,
I roared over the sirens. His eyes were a bloodshot blue and desperate.
You should have stayed out of this. Neither one of you needed to get involved.
And you should have gone to fucking jail instead of me, asshole. I'm going to make sure everyone who's ever heard your name knows exactly what kind of man you are. He pushed me back 2 steps and I let him. I heard feet pounding on the stairs, but this was between him and me.
Better get those hands up so the chief can cuff you. I've been looking forward to this perp walk, I taunted.
In a move impressively fast for an asshole of his age, Wiley reached behind him and pulled the second gun. But I was already on the move. He pulled the trigger just as the first cop hit the second floor. I dodged to the side and kept coming like a freight train. I drew my fist back and let it fly. It connected with his jaw, and Wiley Ogden crumpled like he was made of paper. The gun was right there. I could pick it up and put an end to him, to all the pain he'd caused over the course of his lifetime. But I was better than that. I was better than men like Ogden and my father. I had Sloane to prove it. I had a lifetime with her ahead of me, and nothing was going to endanger that. Nash entered the room, weapon drawn, vest on over what looked like a decent suit.
Suspect is down, he reported into his radio as he eyed me. We good?
I nodded curtly. Yeah.
Thank Christ. I didn't want the paperwork on this.
You might want to let him wake up before you personally slap the cuffs on him. He put your name on the list, not Dilton.
Fucker, Nash muttered. He's lucky Lena's not here. Hey, you're bleeding. Fuck.
Lucian!
A blonde and pink blur flew at me, and Sloane launched herself into my arms.
Go easy on him, Sloaney, Nash instructed. He's shot.
He shot you?
She tried to wriggle free.
Where do you think you're going? I demanded.
I'm going to kill him,
she announced, heading for the door. I nipped her around the waist and pulled her back. No, you're not. I don't want our first-time post-vasectomy reversal to be in a conjugal trailer. She growled in response. Laughing, I carried her to the porch swing where EMTs converged on us.
She wouldn't let us fix her up until you came out, the first explained as he began to clean Sloane's wound.
She winced and I anchored her to my side.
Are you okay? Does it hurt? I asked gruffly.
Only when I smile, which is going to suck for tomorrow when 2 of our best friends get married.
I hate when you hurt, I confessed.
I'm not too fond of you having a gunshot wound, big guy.
I dropped a kiss on the top of her head.
I have bad news,
Sloane said, plucking at the skirt of her dress.
What? Besides my dress being ruined, it looks like one of the shots went through the window in Dad's study and hit the lower branch of the cherry tree. It broke when I climbed down.
It looked as though we all would be carrying the scars from this day. We'll fix it, I promised her. If I had to call in a team of fucking tree surgeons, there was no way I was going to let evil and greed destroy something so precious to me.
This is a clean through and through,
said the other EMT as she examined my wound.
1 inch or 2 higher, and we'd have had a real problem.
Sloane clung to my hand in silence as they patched us up. The street was blocked by emergency vehicles, but a crowd of bystanders was already gathering. Knox, Naomi, Waylay, Lena, Steph, and Jeremiah were crowded together on the other side of the police barricades in their rehearsal dinner finery. Most of the rest of Knockemout had shown up too and watched as a groggy Wiley Ogden was led down the driveway into the back seat of a waiting patrol car. A circle closed along with the car door, I thought with satisfaction.
You two stay here. Banerjee will be back to take your statements,
Sergeant Hopper instructed us. I expected to feel a sense of victory as the man who'd nearly ruined my life faced humiliation at the end of his life as he knew it. Instead,
I felt a wave of frustration at the pointlessness of it all. Greed didn't just destroy the greedy. No, the quest for power corrupted, ruining all it touched. Men like my father, like Hugo and Ogden and Atkins, left a path of destruction behind them. For what? Money? Power? Respect? They'd been the things I'd chased too, but no dollar amount could compare to the woman in my arms. A squealing of tires drew my attention, and I watched as Nolan drove right up onto the sidewalk and vaulted out of an SUV. He hustled up the porch steps two at a time, then froze when he saw me. "Thank fucking Christ," he said, slapping a hand over his heart, and then he proceeded to tackle-hug me on the swing. Sloane's laughter was music to my ears. "Ouch! I'm shot, not dead, and you're not a golden retriever. Get the hell off me," I complained. Nolan winced, still holding on to me. "I'd let go if I could, but I got airsick in that fucking whirlybird. I don't know if I'm going to puke or pass out." "I don't care which one you do. Just don't do it on me."
"I've got this," Sloane said, rising from the swing and putting an arm around Nolan. "Come on, let's see if Naomi has any snacks in her purse. That'll make you feel better."
Nolan looked back at me. "Glad you're not dead, boss." "That makes two of us," I agreed. I watched my fiancé lead Nolan to the barricades and deliver him to our friends. Sloane was immediately engulfed in worried hugs, but valiantly fought her way out of them and returned to me. I held out my arms, and she dropped into my lap, resting her bandaged face on my chest as chaos reigned around us. I pushed off with my foot and set the swing in gentle motion. She held up her hand and studied her engagement ring.
"Thanks for not going all homicidal on Wiley."
"Thank you for trusting me, and for warning me about the second gun." She snuggled closer to my side and let out a satisfied sigh.
"You don't think this whole gunshot wound thing is going to push back sexy time even further, do you?"
"If we didn't have law enforcement crawling all over our house and a wedding rehearsal to attend, I'd have you naked right now."
48. The Happy Couples. Sloane. The flap of the bridal tent opened, and my gorgeous fiancé strolled inside, looking like all seven of the deadly sins in his tuxedo. Naomi looked up from where she was patting Lena on the back, while Lena hyperventilated into a paper bag. Naomi smiled. Lena waved.
"Everything all right, ladies?" Lucian asked.
"I'm deeply in love with my husband, but my goodness, Lucian, you look like sex in a suit," Naomi said, wide-eyed. Lena dropped the paper bag.
"Just tell me Nash is here and still wants to go through with this suit, Daddy."
Lucian's grin was panty-incinerating.
"Your almost husband is wearing a trench in the ground, muttering about how he can't wait to see you."
"Oh, thank God," Lena said, collapsing back in her chair.
"For what it's worth, he'll go weak in the knees when he sees you in that dress," he predicted.
"Thanks, boss," she said weakly. He turned his attention to me, and I felt like a flower blooming in the spring sunshine.
"May I borrow my fiancé for a moment?" he asked.
"Sure," the bride said. "Bring back more champagne," Naomi suggested, nodding at the empty bottle in the grass. I all but skipped to the door. Outside, it was a stunning spring day. Warm, sunny, blue skies. Bird song and the babbling of the creek provided the perfect backdrop to the slow country songs the band was playing. Nash and Lena had decided to start their journey together on the grassy expanse of land they would build their house on. The ceremony and reception would take place under a large white tent next to the creek. It looked as though all of Knockemout had been invited. Lucian led me away from the tents and pulled me behind an oak tree.
"What's going—"
I didn't get any further in my question because Lucian's mouth found mine in a knee-weakening, breath-stealing kiss.
"Holy crap," I managed to gasp when he pulled back.
"That was the first order of business. Now on to the next," he said. "Give me a date."
You want to go on a date? My brain was still scrambled from the kiss.
I want to set a date for our wedding.
He glanced around us at the chaotic merriment.
I don't want to wait. I already wasted enough time. And watching you walk down that aisle today, knowing it's for someone else, is driving me insane.
Christmas Eve. He went still and tense. All his attention was on me. His face was all hard angles and planes, but there was an exquisite softness in his expression.
Christmas Eve, he repeated.
I nodded. Last Christmas was rough. Why not make this one for the record books? Lucian swallowed hard, then nodded.
Christmas Eve, he said again, his voice barely a rasp.
I wrapped my arms around his neck and beamed up at him. I love you, big guy, so stupidly much. He crushed me to him, then winced. Poor baby. Bullet hole or testicle surgery? I teased.
Both.
Lena didn't float down the aisle. She marched. Her father nearly had to jog to keep up with those long, purposeful strides. Her gaze never left Nash's face. And when the happy couple joined hands and stared into each other's eyes with a blinding joy, there were tears from the entire bridal party. Well, okay, there were tears from Naomi and me. Knox and Lucian were mostly stoic and manly. Lucian watched me with that hellfire intensity of his throughout the entire ceremony. And when we met in the middle to walk back down the aisle together, he handed me a fresh handkerchief. We danced, we laughed, and we cried some more, christening with love the very spot that Nash and Lena's house would be built. I barely left Lucian's arms the entire evening. I was safe there. I belonged there. After yesterday's terrifying chaos, I suddenly felt free. Like the last of the shadows that had been looming over our group, our town, had finally dissipated. With Anthony Hugo and Wiley Ogden in jail and Judge Atkins in the morgue, we'd finally made it through the dark forest and come out on the other side. This was the beginning of our happily ever after. As night fell, the festivities continued. Liza J. cut a rug with the handsome biker Wraith. Next to them on the dance floor, Maeve and Kurt swayed side to side, staring deeply into each other's eyes. Nolan and his soon-to-be wife again, Callie, were holding court with my mother, her friends, and several empty bottles of wine. Naomi's parents were in the middle of a hotly contested game of cornhole with Lena's parents. Chloe and Waylay were sitting at the abandoned head table, devouring dessert. Half of Knockemout appeared to be shit-faced on the dance floor. The other half, including the entire police department, was lined up at the bar. Lawlerville had kindly lent Nash some officers so his cops could celebrate with him. As Lucian and I swayed to a Chris Stapleton song, a grinning Steph and Jeremiah appeared, each holding two bottles of champagne.
Shall we?
Steph asked, nodding toward the night. We'll get the glasses, I volunteered. Lucian and I collected the bride and groom, who were saying goodnight to Nash's father. Duke's sobriety was still a new, fresh thing in the family. We helped ourselves to 8 champagne glasses and found our way in the dark to a quiet spot in the meadow, where Steph, Jeremiah, Knox, and Naomi were already waiting.
To the happy couple,
Steph volunteered after Jeremiah filled my glass. Lena shook her head, brilliantly beautiful as a bride.
To the happy couples, she amended.
May we all live happily ever after, I added.
Cheers!
We sat in the grass, drinking champagne and listening to the night symphony of laughter, music, and spring peepers. Lucian pulled me into his lap and nuzzled my neck.
Married, married, engaged, engaged,
Knox said, pointing at each couple in our little circle.
Shit sure happens fast round here.
Have you two set a date? I asked Steph and Jeremiah.
Steph wants at least a year to plan the wedding of the century,
Jeremiah teased.
Hey, Naomi and I have been dreaming about our wedding since we were infants,
Steph said defensively.
Just don't get married on Christmas Eve,
Lucian said, picking up my hand and kissing my engagement ring.
That date's taken.
Lena and Naomi squealed. You set a date!
None of you are invited,
Lucian teased. You're all invited, I corrected. Lucian, Lucifer, Rollins was going to be my husband, and I was going to be his wife. We were going to spend the rest of our lives building a family and driving each other absolutely insane. Maybe it was the champagne or the happy tears, or maybe it was my dad working a little heavenly miracle. But I'd never seen the stars so bright.
I love you, Pixie.
Lucian whispered against my hair, his thumb brushing the scar on my wrist. Epilogue. A Christmas Wedding. Sloane. December 24th dawned crisp and cold with an accommodating amount of snow that had fallen earlier in the week. Perfect for the Christmas effect, but without impeding guests' travel, according to the wedding coordinator Lucian had hired, what with Naomi and Knox being distracted with fertility specialist appointments. Wedding coordinator Tiffany had coordinated us to within an inch of our lives. Our house was full. Even now, laughter rose up from the first floor as the people I loved most in this world got ready to celebrate with us. Lena was probably comparing pregnant bellies with Nolan's wife Callie, while everyone else broke into the champagne. We'd decided to get married at home, where Lucian had spared no expense on decking our halls for our first Christmas together. The ceremony would take place inside, and then the reception was in the backyard. Lucian had somehow managed to get the entire yard under a large heated tent filled with all the glamorous fixings for an event to remember. The aisle was blanketed in cherry blossoms, which were so far out of season I didn't even want to know how much Lucian had spent arranging it. The man had probably paid scientists to clone our tree. Tiffany had been in wedding coordinator heaven with an unlimited budget and a groom who wanted the best of everything. She was terrifying in her detail management and time schedules, which was why I was hiding in our bedroom. I'd sent my half of the bridal party and my mother downstairs to welcome Mary Louise and Alan, who had just arrived, while I took a private moment to freak the fuck out. I was dressed, made up, shoes on, ready to go, and starting to panic. Not seeing Lucian since the, thankfully drama-free, rehearsal dinner had stirred up my nerves. I paced in the most romantic, perfect wedding dress in the history of wedding dresses and thought about how far we'd come in the past several months. Lucian had set his sights on making every wish I'd ever had come true, starting with renovating our bathroom and installing not one but two rain shower heads and a platoon of body jets and continuing to complete the library in record time, with new bells and whistles the entire town was still swooning over. I nervously smoothed my hand over the ball gown satin skirt as I wandered our room. As happy as I was for this particular occasion, I still felt the whole of my father's absence. Knowing how proud he would have been to walk me down the aisle, how he would have loved quizzing Kurt, now Maeve's fiancé, about his curriculum for the year, how he would have danced with Mom until their feet hurt. My heart was still just a little bit broken. Shit, don't freaking cry now and wreck the eye makeup, I warned myself. Tiffany would kill me if the makeup artist had to come back. I fanned my hands in front of my eyes and thought about not sad things, like the fact that Wiley Ogden was in prison and would never have the opportunity to hurt anyone I loved ever again. And Lucian was working from home 2 days a week and commuting, often by helicopter, on the other days. And about how the entire town had turned out for the grand reopening of the library. Crap, I was back to teary again. I wished Lucian was here. He always knew how to calm me down. Or rile me up, depending on the situation. I thought about texting him, and then remembered that Naomi had my phone to document the big day without me having to do the documenting. A tap at the window startled me. I spun in a voluminous pool of taffeta and satin to find Lucian freaking Rollins crouched on the porch roof in a tuxedo. I ran to the window as he opened it. I thought it was bad luck to see the bride before the wedding, I said, even as I half-dragged him through the window. He stood staring at me, then slowly shook his head.
I don't believe in bad luck. Not anymore.
His smile was devastating. What do you think? I asked, twirling in front of him.
I think you're the most beautiful bride I've ever seen, and I'm the luckiest man on earth.
It was the boob-highlighting corset top, I decided. I stopped twirling and fell into his arms. Good answer.
Are you still sure about everything?
He asked, tipping my chin up to look into my eyes. Marrying you?
Marrying me, 2 weeks in Fiji, fostering, all of it.
When we returned from our excessively sexy honeymoon, we would be beginning the application process to become foster parents. Traditional baby-making efforts were still ongoing and very, very enjoyable, but neither of us wanted to wait to start our family. Absolutely, I promised. The tears were welling up dangerously fast this time. Thank you for making all my dreams come true, big guy. Lucian ran a thumb under my eye, catching a tear as it spilled free.
It's all I've ever wanted to do, he said earnestly.
Nope, no, stop it right now, I ordered as I stepped out of his arms. No more sweetness, or I'll cry and ruin my entire face, and Tiffany scares the hell out of me. She might call off the wedding.
Tell me what you need,
he said, a faint smile curving his lips. I need one of your insulting pep talks. Don't hold back, I insisted, gesturing for him to bring it on. His smile was wicked.
Get your shit together, Sloane. Do you want to look like Alice Cooper in our wedding photos that are going to be splashed all over publications across the country? I thought you were tougher than that.
Good. That's good. Keep it coming.
If I so much as see one single tear on that beautiful fucking face of yours before you walk down that aisle to me, I'll tell Tiffany we want her to plan every anniversary party for the rest of our lives.
I gasped. Mean!
Don't be a fucking baby.
Me? You better keep it together, since you're the one who's been dreaming about this since the first time you climbed that damn cherry tree. I shot back.
You'll be happy to know that that damn cherry tree is weight-bearing again. The tree surgeons did an excellent job.
Good. Keep distracting me, I said.
I have something for you.
Damn it, Lucifer!
Suck it up and deal with it,
he said, handing over a thick rich guy envelope. Where do you even buy stationery like this, wealthy person mart? I demanded, waving the linen envelope under his nose.
Don't be ridiculous. We shop at Richie's R Us.
Rolling my eyes, I opened the snooty envelope and pulled out the papers. This is a lot of legalese. Did you just gift me a prenup? I told you I'd sign one.
With a roll of his eyes, Lucian flipped through the pages and tapped one.
It's not a prenup, Pix. It's an endowment and paperwork to make the Simon Walton Foundation official.
Well, shit, big guy. My eyes went right to the number. Is that a phone number, or is that an incredibly well-endowed endowment?
You did good work. This will allow it to continue, maybe with a few full-time employees.
I looked up at him, stunned. Like Mary Louise?
Who better to handle the day-to-day? And I thought Alan might be interested in officially joining the fight now that he's passed the bar. I also thought, though the decision is yours, my mother might be a good addition.
Shortly after their fight, Kayla had started seeing a therapist. She and Lucian had quickly reconciled, and Kayla had finally started to take her independence seriously. In the process, she and my mother had managed to become friends. I stared down at the page as words and numbers swam before my eyes.
You're going to cry again, aren't you?
No, I'm not, assface. God, why do you have to give such thoughtful gifts? You're such a jerk, I sniffled.
Suck it up, or I'll be forced to unleash Tiffany.
Blinking back tears, I crossed the room to my nightstand and found the wrapped package I'd tucked into the drawer. This is for you, I said, thrusting it at him. While he carefully undid the wrapping, I resumed the fanning of my eyes.
What is it?
He asked, flipping over the frame. He went statue still, looking like he'd been carved from marble by a besotted sculptor. It was a picture from this summer of me, Maeve, Mom, and Chloe on the front porch. Lucian was grinning in the middle, his arms around us protectively. Beneath the photo was a slip of paper, the last text my dad had sent him.
If I could have chosen a son in this lifetime, it would have been you. Take care of my girls.
Lucian swallowed hard. He opened his mouth, but no words came. And when he covered his eyes with his free hand, I knew I'd hit the mark.
This is...
His voice was raspy, and when he looked up at me, those gray eyes were red-rimmed and filled with so much love, it took my breath away. I waved a hand between us. Don't you dare! You need to get your shit together, Lucifer, because if you break, I break. He reached for me and hauled me into his chest. He'd be so proud of you, Lucian, I said on a broken whisper. I can feel it. He'd be bursting with pride, and he'd be so happy for us. A silent shudder rolled through the man I loved, the man who'd taken a bullet for me, the man who'd rebuilt my dreams for me. I love you so damn much, Lucian. I always have. He pulled back and peered down at me, holding my wrists in his strong hands.
Everything I did was for you, Sloan, because it was always you.
This is everything I've ever wanted, Lucian, I confessed. You're everything I ever wanted.
You saying that in my arms, wearing my ring, is everything I've ever wanted.
The ceremony was performed by Emery, who needed to pause several times to blow his nose noisily into a billowy handkerchief. Sloane didn't walk down the aisle. She ran and jumped into Lucian's arms. They said their vows locked in an embrace. When the officiant asked, "Who gives this woman to this man?" Karen Walton stood and said, "Her father and I do." There wasn't a dry eye for the rest of the ceremony. Nolan cried and wrapped Lucian in a bear hug. Nolan's wife documented the hug with her camera, and Petula framed it for the office. Sloane and Lucian danced their first dance as man and wife to Shania Twain's "From This Moment On." Lena took Sloane and Naomi aside to whisper the word "twins" to them on the dance floor. Knox, Nash, and their father shared a hug on the dance floor. The family was surprised to find the front porch Christmas tree sporting a new angel that bore a striking resemblance to Simon Walton. No one knows where it came from, but everyone agrees that it looks like he's winking.
Bonus epilogue. Happily Ever After. Lucian. A decade or so later. Christmas Eve was always chaos in our house. It was tradition that our family gathered here every year for an over-the-top holiday-slash-anniversary dinner. Over the years, our family had grown considerably. In the immediate family, we had two dogs, the now elderly and still judgmental Meow Meow, and a very expensive saltwater aquarium with one bad-tempered fish that had proceeded to eat every other fish until a pretty little clownfish kicked his ass. Sloane named him Lucian. Despite my annual offering to hire a caterer, the women and Steph commandeered the kitchen, drinking wine, laughing, and cooking for hours while the men ran herd on the younger kids. There were so many traditions and so many people observing them. It should have been overwhelming, but every time the front door opened and a familiar face wandered in carrying gifts, bundled up against the cold, another broken piece inside me knit itself back together. Not that I'd ever admit it. I was, after all, Lucian fucking Rollins, and even though I'd gone part-time in my own company, I was still a scary motherfucker. Except to my family, of course. I wandered into the kitchen, holding my first grandbaby. Amara was a tiny, bald little peanut in a too-big Christmas onesie. I hadn't put her down since she got here. Sloane swooped by and delivered a kiss to Amara's cheek and then mine. "Looking good, Grandpa," she teased. Our oldest son, Caden, was 25. We'd finalized his and his sister Caitlin's adoption from foster care when Sloane was pregnant with our first baby, a boy we named Simon. In the course of 4 months, we'd gone from zero children to three, and we'd added a fourth, Juliana, just 1 year later. I shot my wife a smoldering look, a promise of things to come. She winked, then asked, "When will Nolan's family get here?" "They'll be here tomorrow night in time for Steph and Jeremiah's Christmas party." Steph had purchased the foreclosed Red Dog horse farm on the outskirts of town and turned it into a luxury spa. Every year, we gathered there for a catered feast. Knox marched through the kitchen with his youngest daughter tossed over his shoulder. He paused long enough for Gilly to reach down and snag two cookies off the platter. "Viking and mini-Viking, you're both in trouble," Naomi called after them. "Does anyone need anything in here? A beverage? A clean dish towel? Some sanity?" I offered, admiring the platters of food. "Wine," everyone chorused at the same time. "Lou, the kitchen needs wine," I bellowed at Naomi's father, who, with Lena's father, was manning the bar we'd added in the dining room. Amara looked up at me wide-eyed and then belly laughed. "How's my little one?" Waylay asked, cooing at her daughter nestled in my arms. In a twist of fate, Caden and Waylay had officially joined our families by overcoming years of friendship and falling in love in college. I still thought they were terrifyingly young to have jumped into that kind of commitment, but Sloane made me promise to keep my concerns to myself. As my beautiful wife pointed out, if we'd done our job right, Caden would be a well-adjusted, productive adult who knew what he wanted. So far, her prediction appeared to be accurate. Even Emery, who was in the family room with his wife Sasha, wearing a Hanukkah sweater and explaining the dreidel to Nash's twins, assured me that they seemed like a happy, healthy couple.
Knock, knock!
A cheery voice called from the front door. Let's go see who it is, I told Amara. We arrived in time to see my mother-in-law, Karen, stroll through the door with my mother, their boyfriends, and their suitcases. I was still withholding judgment on both men. Even though the barrel-chested Max, who charmed Karen through salsa dancing, and the Purple Heart recipient veteran Jose looked at my mother as if she'd given birth to the sun, the moon, and everything in between, I wasn't ready to trust either of them any further than I could throw them. The great-grandmothers dissolved into delighted squeals, and Amara was wrestled from me. My flower-covered wife appeared and started doling out hugs and cheek kisses. Your rooms are ready upstairs. Dinner is in an hour, and wine is now, she said. We'll take the bags, Jose offered, using his good arm to heft my mother's overnight bag. As an above-the-elbow amputee, the man was annoyingly good at everything, which only served to make me want to find his weakness even more. Karen sighed as she watched Max head for the staircase.
Tell me the truth. Am I too old for this?
Too old for what? Sloane asked, slipping her arm around my waist.
To be so infatuated.
We're never too old, my mother assured her emphatically, winking at me as she jiggled Amara on her hip. I was still getting used to this new, confident mom, and she was still getting used to Lucian, the family man, but we were making it work.
Mom, it's like Dad picked him out personally for you. He's lovely, Sloane said. He is, isn't he? Speaking of lovely, when are Maeve and Kurt getting here?
Karen asked. Maeve just texted. Chloe and her girlfriend just arrived, so they'll be here in a few minutes, Sloane reported.
I can't wait to meet the woman who got Chloe to stop talking long enough to fall in love, Karen said with a grin.
A twitch of fur caught my eye, and I spotted Meow Meow hidden behind the drapes in the front window. Knox growled theatrically from the living room and lunged on hands and knees. Two kids screamed and streaked down the hallway, three dogs yapping at their heels. Knox laughed until he had to get to his feet. God damn it, this middle-aged thing sucks, he groaned. We were all older. More things hurt getting out of bed in the morning, but I'd never felt better in my life. Being part of this circus of a family had healed so many scars I didn't even know I carried. I'd stopped tattooing over the physical ones after watching my wife wear hers like a badge of honor.
Ho, ho, ho!
Duke Morgan, Knox and Nash's father, appeared in the open doorway. The man was dressed as Santa, and his wife was dressed as Mrs. Claus. On the porch was a red velvet sack overflowing with presents.
Grandpa Santa's here! Nash, in uniform, because he was on call, yelled.
Lena was tucked into his side, her arms around his waist. Kids from all corners of the house ran to greet the newcomers. Taking advantage of the distraction, I grabbed Sloane by the wrist and nodded toward the front door. She grinned at me. We snuck our coats out of the closet and ducked outside onto the porch. There's too many damn people in there, I complained as she led me to the swing.
You love it, and you know it, Lucifer.
I did, and there was no hiding it despite my best efforts. I pulled my wife into my side and covered us with the fleece blanket we kept on the porch for such escapes. Sloane snuggled against me and let out a sigh of contentment.
Every year just keeps getting better, she said.
I stroked my hand over her hair, currently a silver blonde. It really did. My semi-retirement hadn't been the bump I'd expected it to be. Nolan and Lena had been promoted. The unbearably chipper Holly had moved in next door to us in my old house with her new husband to work with Sloane's foundation. Between the library and her foundation, Sloane continued to amaze me with her generosity and tenacity. We'd kept my place in the city, but it had taken buying a monstrous place in the Outer Banks to get Sloane to truly slow down. Every year, we wrangled the entire extended brood into a two-week beach vacation, the kind I'd always dreamed of as a kid, with bonfires and fireworks and lazy days spent getting too much sun. The life we'd built was the stuff of dreams. Sloane sat up and looked at me with eager eyes.
I got you something.
You got me everything.
said the rich guy who literally showers me with gifts on a daily basis. Do you think you can handle your anniversary present?
I sighed. Of course, but do it quickly before someone finds us out here. It had become yet another little tradition between just the two of us. Sentimental gifts exchanged privately on our anniversary. This morning, I'd given Sloane hers, a custom-made dress by the same designer who had made her wedding gown. She was wearing it now, and every time I looked directly at her, my heart beat just a little faster. Smugly, she lifted a pillow from the end of the swing to reveal a package wrapped in red and green plaid paper. I unearthed an acrylic frame from beneath the paper and lifted it free. It was a single, perfect cherry blossom.
It's from our tree. I figured, since you gave each kid a cutting, that you should have something from it that you can enjoy all year round.
I traced my fingers over the blossom that had symbolized so much for me for so long. Hope, love, family. All of it I'd earned. All of it Sloane had given me. It's nice. I managed to get the words out around the lump in my throat. Sloane grinned, bouncing on the cushion.
I knew you'd love it.
She paused her victory dance as the sound of breaking glass, a chorus of uh-ohs, and raucous barking sounded from inside.
Now, get your shit together before we go back in there.
I chuckled and looked up to catch the winking angel on top of the porch tree. He would have loved this, I said.
You know what else he would have loved? The dad and grandpa you are.
I pulled her into my lap and framed her face with my hands. All for you, always.
This has been Things We Left Behind, written by Lucy Score, narrated by Lila Winters and Sebastian York. Text copyright 2023 by Lucy Score. Production copyright 2023 by That's What She Said Publishing, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.